Metal alloys are mixtures of different chemical elements, and adding certain elements can make a metal harder, others can alter the melting point and help the metal resist corrosion. But there are tens of metals to choose from, and how can we work out which to include and in what proportions? Professor Roger Reed is Director of Research at the School of Metallurgy and Materials at Birmingham University. He joins us now. Hello, Roger.
Hello there. How are you tonight?
I'm great. So what's a traditional way of working out how to make an alloy?
Well, traditionally, of course, a lot of so-called bucket chemistry has been used to find out which elements to use for the alloys. So you would typically mix up elements such as nickel and chromium and aluminium and titanium and so on and so on for the so-called nickel-based superalloys. And then you would test them in mechanical testing apparatus and work out whether one has adequate properties for a given application. So, for example, in the jet engine, you may be interested in making sure that the alloys have got sufficient strength or toughness or even something as complicated as creep resistance. So a lot of empirical studies have been done by test iterations. You make the alloys, you test them, and then perhaps after maybe a few hundred alloys, you have one which you think you can use.
That sounds like a hideously time-consuming and expensive process.
Well, that's right. You know, many people spend lots of time and, of course, lots of money. You know, it may be up to, for a typical turbine disc for a jet engine, you know, it may be up to £1 million or perhaps even 10 times that to have the alloy ready for use in the engine with all of the necessary test data measured carefully.
So what are you doing which is different?
Well, we've been working on computer modelling programs to try to use theoretical methods to come up with what we think are the optimum compositions for these sorts of components for jet engines. So the idea is that you would do the necessary theory and calculations on the computer and then to choose the alloy composition which you think is best match to the properties that you need for these applications.
So are you starting off right on the atomic scale with quantum mechanics or doing something slightly different?
Yes, there are different ways to do it. Certainly we make use of quantum mechanical methods, so-called density functional theory, where one, subject to a number of assumptions, solves Schrödinger's equation to work out the bond energies for different elements, and in particular for the energies associated with the different elements swapping positions on the crystal lattice. So that's certainly something we do. We also use high-level thermodynamical methods based on solution theory, which have got parameters in there which describe how the bonding behaves.
So essentially you're using quantum mechanics to get figures which you then feed into another larger scale model, which then feed into another one?
We come up with what we call merit indices, and those merit indices are figures of merit which describe how any given trial or synthetic composition would behave in creep or in fatigue or in strength. And we do that by making estimates for suitable defect energies which describe how easy it is for that alloy to deform. It comes down to a number of composition-dependent energies which we can estimate using the theory that you've just described.
I guess you're not just dealing with two metals in an alloy, you're dealing with many, many. Does this add more
difficulty? Well, yes. That's quite right. The kind of alloys that I look at in my research are the so-called nickel-based superalloys, and those are the alloys which are used at the very hottest parts of the turbine engine of the type that you would use for jet propulsion or for electricity generation in a power generation circuit. And those alloys are quite complicated. They typically have maybe 7, 8, 9, maybe as many as 10 different alloying elements. We add chromium, for example, and cobalt. The chromium is added for much the same reason that you would add chromium to a stainless steel to make it oxidation and corrosion resistant. We add also elements such as aluminium and titanium to promote precipitation strengthening. So that makes the alloy start to behave a bit like a composite. So you have small particles of a second phase present, which adds strength to the materials. And then we add other exotic elements, much rarer and more expensive, refractory elements like tungsten, tantalum, and even rhenium, and even some precious metals like ruthenium have been shown to confer the very best properties, particularly in creep, where one is interested in making sure that the alloys don't deform and stretch continuously over time under the stress that they experience in the engine. So yes, there's a quite a range of elements which are added, and this does provide the complexity which makes the computer modeling methods useful, because if you think about it, each element needs to have a particular concentration associated with it, and the concentration ranges are quite wide, and with so many elements there, perhaps 8 or 9 or 10, the number of combinations that you can come up with synthetically is quite large. And that's, of course, the power of the computer modeling methods, because you know, we're able to do that sorting and ranking and prediction on the computer without the need to go to the laboratory to make the alloys and do the testing. And that's obviously does two things. It reduces the cost, but it also allows us to identify the compositions quickly, and in a market where you need to get the new alloys into the engine quickly so that new products can be flown within perhaps a period of 1 or 2 years rather than the traditional 8 or 9 years, that's very, very useful.
So are you fine-tuning principles which people have worked out by the rough-and-ready system, or are you working out new things which can go into the mixture?
Well, new theories have been needed, yes. For certain, of course, we are building on the shoulders of giants, as they say. You know, lots of people have worked on these sorts of alloys over the last 20, 30 years. And, of course, they can be traced back to Whittle's very first engine, which flew, around about the time of the Second World War. But theory has been needed to explain and to put in place composition-dependent theory for the important properties such as I said, strength and creep and toughness. And I think in the last 5 or so years, that theory has matured, and that's really what's allowed us to propose these new computer modelling methods to do the alloy design using theoretical methods.
So once you've got one of these, once you've run your models, what do you pass on to the guys who've actually got to make the things?
Well, typically we would suggest alloy compositions which we believe to be useful. So that would mean the exact concentration in either a weight percentage or maybe an atomic percentage, a percentage of the different elements there. So, for example, for a turbine disc alloy, we may specify perhaps 15 or 16 weight percent of chromium in the latest alloys. You may then have smaller amounts of aluminium and titanium, tungsten, molybdenum, and so on and so on. We specify the compositions which we believe are required to the very best properties.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Roger. That's Professor Roger Reed from Birmingham University.
And Roger will be with us for the rest of the show, so if you would like to get in touch with any questions or comments,
you can tweet at Naked Scientists, comment at facebook.com/thenakedscientists, or email chris@thenakedscientists.com.